The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Tuesday, September 8th. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for the day. Man, I have so many things to talk about, so many things to say, until the point I overwhelmed. I overwhelmed because I even being inboxed by several people. Said, are you talking about this today or are you talking about that today? And I said, man, I have a list of things that I need to talk about. Today's show is sponsored by Island Games. I'm looking up for their write-up right now because I want to make sure I know the due date. The due date. Hold on, that's not it. Yeah. This phone of mine's. That's not it again. Yes, but today I'm talking about the making of the Bahamas. How to make a nation. And because I have so many topics that I want to discuss, right? I'm going to align all of the topics together to sort them up to make one particular theme on how to make a nation and what we are doing. Okay, now I found what I missed. Today, Tuesday, is the deadline, actually, for Percy's Island Game. So let me read that because today's show is sponsored by them. And I want to give them credence because I appreciate they sponsoring the show for this past month. So I'm hoping that they continue with that with me. So attention, Island Game players. Percy's pension plan is now accepting applications. Deposit $25 and you are officially in the running for a weekly salary for up to $1,000 per week for a full year. So make sure everyone understands that. It's going to be for a full year and up to $1,000 a week you're running for. So application closed today. See, because I remember that. Applications closed today, September 8th. So you need to apply now, right? You need to apply quickly if you haven't done that yet. And you apply to theislandgame.com. So applications closed today, theislandgame.com. I'm going to inbox the sponsors to find out when there's going to be the drawing and find out who's going to be the winner. I'll hopefully invite them on the show and so we could talk about it. And hire that person who's the winner. So this is a promotional gaming campaign and is not an insurance policy, pension fund, retirement savings plan, investment product, or other regulated financial service. I have Siobhan Johnson in Zoom room. Kermit, I have Siobhan on the Zoom room. I invited her on because she's scheduled to be on for Wednesday, actually. But because I have a range of topics, pardon me, that I want to discuss, I said, let me invite her on. So we need to have a two-day worth of conversation. So I'll start this conversation now, right? Let me read this, because I was trying to find out what is a nation, because that's the theme of today's show. And I want to understand, is the Bahamas a nation? And why aren't we acting like a nation? So let me give a definition. A nation is a group of people who share common identity, usually based on things such as history, culture, language, ancestry, traditions, or shared homeland. We have several nations in the Bahamas. We have several nations in the Bahamas. We have one country, but we have several nations thriving in the Bahamas. A nation does not necessarily have to be an independent country. And trying to do a comparison between a nation and a country, a nation are people with shared sense of identity and belonging. And a country or state is a territory with a government and political sovereignty. The Bahamas Nation refers to people who identify as Bahamians and share a common national history and identity. The Commonwealth of the Bahamas is a sovereign country state. Some nations exist without their own independent country. For example, the Kurdish nation, whose people live primarily across several countries. Then I asked ChatGPT how to make a nation. So you have to create a nation culturally without creating a new country. A community can develop a shared identity, traditions, symbols, history, and political aspirations while remaining within an existing state. And when I started, I said we have several nations in the Bahamas and we need to identify what is a Bahamian nation and those people who have the same shared identity and cultural beliefs. I asked a question, let me go back to that question I asked last week, and I had a continuous conversation on what it is. Do children who are immigrants, or, and I don't want to use the word immigrants in this particular example, children who are not Bahamians, do they need a student's visa to attend school? Last week we had Siobhan Johnson, who is our resident analyst now, because she does, her expertise is critical risk management, right? And I'm doing a critical risk management on how do we form a nation inside the Bahamas. And this is where she comes in. She read the act or the treaty that we signed on and on our responsibility to children in the Bahamas, who live in the Bahamas. All children live in the Bahamas. And what duty of care our government has accepted and adopted as to in protecting these children who are under our state, right? I mentioned that there in the United States, there's such a thing as a student visa. If you are an immigrant living in the country, visa to attend school. Some texters, bloggers said that we have something called a belonger status, and we have something called residency status for children who attend school who are children of migrants. Now, this is where the distinction comes in. If you are a migrant working in the Bahamas with status, and I'm going to change that word from migrant to be expat. An expat in this sense, not meaning the white set, because we usually in our colonized minds look at expat as being having a complexion or a color, and migrants having the next color and a complexion. But in this example, when I say expat, that means black and white. Those who have work permits to work in the Bahamas and they have children and they brought their children in the Bahamas to attend school, right? They get a status. The children have a status to attend school. And that status would be similar to a student visa, a belongers permit, or a residency status, which means that they attend school. Those people, those expats, black and white, and this includes people who are big executives and people who are teachers and government officials who are here, black and white, they obtain a status, a residency status for their children, and the children must attend private school. They pay for their education. The issue here is what happens to those people who are immigrants in the Bahamas, who do not have any status. They're here, and for lack of a better word, illegally. Yes, they're here. They're undocumented. Let's use that word. They're undocumented residents in the Bahamas, and they have children. Because they are undocumented, apparently, they don't have to get a residency status for their children, particularly if their children were born here, even if their children were born outside of the country. But if their children were born here, technically, their children has the status of their parents. And we can use Asian migrants in this example because they're the largest immigrant group inside the Bahamas. If a child who born in the Bahamas, let's say they are Bahamian by birth, but belongs to a different nation, and the nation would be the Haitian nation, or the same history, tradition, roots, language, right? Because their parents are not documented, it seems that there is a loophole, or it seems that our government has not enforced the law that they need a belonging certificate or they need a residence identification card to go into school. They bring their birth certificates and say, well, I'm born here, or I'm not born here, and they attend school, which is completely contrary to those people who have status, and they have to present their documents to their to the school to start. But let me read this. I got an article written some time ago where Jeff Lloyd, Minister of Education, spoke. The minister encourages reporting on denial of school admissions. See, I'm showing you that our government is culpable in what is happening here, right? Because one would assume, I understand the treaty that we signed on, right? However, there's documents that needs to be furnished and turned into the school, and you shouldn't be able to get into the school unless the documents exist. But we've had successive ministers who find us culpable and allowing the laws to be breached. Let me read what happened regarding Jeff Lloyd some years ago. This is August 15, 2018. So the Minister of Education, Jeff Lloyd, is encouraging the public to report by any instance of a child being denied admissions to public school. He is responding to claims from Right Bahamas that schools are demanding proof of status from students. Mr. Lloyd told reporters ahead of his weekly cabinet meeting that both the law and the government's policy position is very clear on the issue. He said the Free National Movement government years ago made a very clear statement with regard to this. All children in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas who can provide some information with regard to where they live, who their parents are, and are entitled to be registered in our school system. The problem with that is Shantytown is not a resident. You cannot establish a location or a residence in a shantytown. But for some reason, our leaders and allow certain things. We have now immigrants who live in shanty towns with permanent residence and say you can't have a permanent residence or citizenship without a fixed address because a shanty town is illegal. It's not registered. It's not acknowledged. But the problem is with our leaders. Let's go continues with this article saying. He added, this is Jeff Lloyd, no educator, no principal, no school system is authorized to request them to prove no status. We are not in that business. Mr. Lloyd appealed to anyone who may have been affected to reach out to his ministry. He said, if you know of a single instance where a child has been denied admission to public school and there is no justifiable reason for that denial, bring it to the Ministry of Education's attention. He added, I need to know the full and complete name of the child's date of birth, the school where that permission was denied, and who at that school may have denied such permission. Bring it to our attention, but for you to continue to say in the media, oh, children are being denied access to Bahamian educational system, and you are not giving me evidence that this is so, I think that this is unfair. And if you are intention, and if your intention is mischief, then I repudiate that to the pits of hell, he said. He also promised that authorities will address those cases reported. This is where I bring in my resident research person. Siobhan Johnson, thank you very much for joining us at Guardian Radio AM. Thank you for being available to me. I know it was last minute I said, hey, you available. But are you there?
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you again. And last week you read a treaty, and I'm not sure if you had chance to bring that up. And hopefully I was talking long enough that you did that quick search so we could reread that so we could appreciate exactly what it says. Because it says who or what our government signed on to. And I want us to try to understand that someone has become comfortable in terms of managing the Bahamas. And as we try to create a nation, And as we have several nations within the Bahamas, we realize, I am now realizing, that the problem is not Bahamians. The problem is our leaders. Our leaders are not doing what they are mandated to do. Do you still happen to have that document? Because I should have warned you beforehand. Forgive me for that. Javon, you still there, or are you doing your Google search?
Yes, you should have warned me beforehand.
Yeah, I'll talk until you find it. And I should have warned you before. That's why I had to pre-text it and warn the people, and I didn't tell you because I was busy texting you, saying, can you come on in the meantime, right? So that's one of the things I want to discuss, right?
Yeah, it's called Convention on the Rights of a Child.
Oh, you have it. So I'll go quiet now. And I'll let you read it to my listening audience so they can appreciate the conversation. Like I said, I have a series of different things and topics I want to talk about as we talk about the creation of a nation, and this nation called the Bahamas.
But while I pull it up, I mean, do you think it's right? Who do you think should enforce these conventions that we sign on to?
Okay. Should it be the... Okay, now I'll discuss that. I don't believe that... educators should be immigration officers and enforce any kind of immigration law. I do not think people know that I do not support the principal, the guidance counselors, or any of them policing any child that comes into the school. But before the child comes to the school, I believe that certain documents must be presented. Same way how I have a challenge trying to get this passport, and they say certain documents need to be presented before I get it. I believe all people should be able, or the students should be, must present documents so they get access to education. You can't, if the child is living inside the shanty town, they need to tell the parents, now is not considered an address. You need to go find yourself a house, and then you can bring your child and take advantage of the opportunity for education. I believe that. I don't necessarily believe that you need to, that the children need to show, if their parents are citizens of the Bahamas, or have status on the Bahamas, but I would need to know the status of the child. This child must present a birth certificate, either if it's in the Bahamas or wherever country it's at. And then it needs to show whether the child is, at this point, Bahamian citizen, in order for them to get whatever benefits that Bahamians have. Benefits Bahamian citizens get. Apparently, they don't get no benefits. They get the same benefits with anyone else. And it's not any extra benefits that Bahamians get in contrast to any other person. Be all get the same thing, whatever it is. But I believe that Bahamians should get more benefits for being constitutionally Bahamian, right? And I believe these documents must be presented. And one of those documents, I believe that this should be that the child must apply for a permit to attend school because the school is for Bahamians, for the promotion and the development of the Bahamas. And if you're not Bahamian, that means you're supposed to pay a fee. I'm not going to deny you access. I'm just saying, you're supposed to pay a fee. And that fee could be nominal. It don't have to be expensive. But they need to put into the system in order to make room, in order to give access, in order to pay for those things.
I pulled up something that I think you'd be more interested in, which is what the Ministry of Education says for Bahamian and a non-Bahamian to register for school. And it says that the Bahamian citizen must have an official birth certificate, NIB card, up-to-date passport photo, proof of address or residency. And I'll read that. It says, typically verified via a current utility bill, a formal rental receipt or mortgage lease agreement, previous academic records, and parents or guardians' identification. Then it says, additional requirements for non-Bahamian citizens. Valid passport of the child, parents' work permit, immigration status letter, legal guardianship letter. So on that basis, based on the shanty town, I don't think they could get a utility bill for a shanty town.
Now you see where the conflict comes in. So somebody is comparable in terms of asking for the right information for people to enter the school. And I'm saying that I don't blame no immigrant. They need to get their children to school. I blame our officials. And when you read the article with Jeff Lloyd and what he says, it seems that someone said, okay, we ain't going to ask for none of these things. Basically, let's let any buck goes. And this is what is happening inside the Bahamas. As we try to develop a nation, as we try to make a country, as we try to have people vested in the system. And when you do not have take the effort to assure that you're connected to what I call Bahamiano, you take advantage of the system instead of adding to the system. And I'll give you time to continue to see if you find that particular treaty with the rights of the child for education. As I deviate to another topic in terms of making the Bahamas, right? So whenever you find it, just let me know and I'll be happy to pause and let you read that. Another topic I wanted to talk about is the CARICOM observers came to the Bahamas and they observed something. They said they were uneasy. And I have the newspaper. Siobhan can't hear me. No one, they can't even hear me. Bring me that newspaper, The Guardian.
I can hear you.
Not you, Siobhan. We have another Siobhan outside who refused to give me the newspaper. Yeah, bring that newspaper, Siobhan.
Yeah, my namesake.
Yeah, but she was talking to me on the voice thing. Your namesake. Yeah, she's Siobhan too. I'm on the air though, Siobhan. Yeah, I'm on the air. I'm talking to people. Okay, sorry about that. So election observers raised concerns of media bias favoring the PLP. The Commonwealth Observers Group, COG, has raised concerns about Director of Communications in the Office of the Prime Minister holding an equivalent role as spokesperson for the governing Progressive Liberal Party ahead of the 2026 general election, saying that this undermines public confidence in the separation of party and state. In a report issued yesterday by COG on its mission to the Bahamas to observe the May 12th, also spoke of the perception, and this continues lying, perception looking for the correct article. There's three, four articles there. The press, due to the close relationship some owners of private media companies had with political parties, singling out Tribune publisher Robin Caron's connection to the PLP. The observers also said that Davis administration appointed of Clint Watson, who was general manager of state-run Bahamas Broadcasting Corporation at the time, to a senator shortly after the general election, undermining any likely claim of neutrality of ZNS. Now, I'll stop there. You read that in the Nassau Guardian today. Headlines on the front page say election observers raise concerns of media bias favoring PLP. It's a good read. These are some things that I've raised on the show. I personally like the director of communication. The gentleman is a brilliant man. And it says wonders of the prospects of Bahamian youth in frontline politics. But someone bastardized the system. Someone bastardized a system where the director of communication for the government and the director of communication for the political party, the Progressive Liberal Party, seemed to be functioning simultaneously. It seemed to me that they were using the same resources. At the same time, he's supposed to be on the job working for the Bahamian people. He is working, to me, for his political party. Same tools and resources that should be in for the Bahamian people seem to me was being abused by the Progressive Liberal Party. And I raised concern regarding the chairman. No, he was the general manager of the broadcasting corporation ZNS. I raised concerns about that. And it seems as if those in the system who should care, who knew better, and my MP included, Mr. Fred Mitchell, who is a broadcaster by trade and a lawyer by trade, who should have known better, chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party, he said nothing. He said nothing because it benefited them. And I raised a concern again. And I said, it doesn't mean I do not like you all, but this is not good for the nation, or what we call the Bahamas. And as we hire international local bloggers, international local communicators, local and international media group to propel the Bahamas, to advertise the Bahamas, those same people are advertising and propelling the PLP. And something got to be wrong with it. And I'm hopefully that they address it. Because remember that time when the Progressive Liberal Party went to Bermuda to celebrate the PLP there, and they went on the official government plane, rented out, and said, but they party supporters. Is this a party thing? Or is this a government thing? And then they yielded. The chairman of the Progressive Liberal Party came and said, yes, we were wrong. We will pay the government back. We know they did an initial payment of compensation back to the Treasury, and they said they could make a second one, and everything gone quiet then. I haven't heard anything if they paid a second payment after that. But one or two of these things you may don't want to comment on, right? But going back, did you able to find my treaty?
Sorry, I wasn't able to find the exact one I read on air.
Okay, then we'll move from that.
Because, you know, it's a part of a larger convention.
Yes. And if you want to just talk, because I know you in your personal life have been involved in a number of conventions and went on a number of trips representing the government. And as we sang on these things, I know you have intel on that. If you want to give a synopsis of on your what you think, what you should know, go ahead and then we'll continue the conversation.
The media story or
the education first and then we go to the media story next.
I mean, in general, it basically says that up until primary education, you know, you can't deny the child access to education because of their immigration status.
And I wanted to discuss that in particular. Up to primary education, you can't deny education to anybody. But primary education and high school education are two different things. And that high school education, there can be a fee. And I say in our government, not even enforcing that. It appears it is. And I think we need to have action. I don't want to disenfranchise any Bohemian waiting, and let's use that term. Right? Because more than likely, number of those people who are born in the Bahamas more likely will get citizenship when they turn 18 if they're not fine, wanting something. So I don't want to disenfranchise. But however, our government has enforced to ensure that a nation is being birthed, that there's an appreciation for being Bahamian, that there's a transition from being non-Bahamian to Bahamian. And that is not happening. Right? As we are having two separate societies, a society where one set of migrants who have status are forced to pay, and those who are also migrants but are undocumented migrants are seemingly allowed to take advantage of the system, and the system is being challenged, and there's no money being put into the Bahamian system in order for its survivability to take care and furnish a new generation in the future. But I'll move on to what is the conflicting between a directive of communication for a political party and a directive of communication for a, and I see a call coming right now. I'm going to do a quick chat GPT search. I asked ChatGPT, is there a conflict between being a director of communication for a political party and a director of communication for the government? It says, yes. Serving simultaneously as the official spokesman for the office of the prime minister and the official spokesman for a political party represents a significant conflict of interest in most democratic systems. While both roles involve public relations for the same political leader, they are governed by entirely different legal, ethical, and funding frameworks. The core conflict stems from three main distinctions: state resources versus partisan gain. The prime minister's spokesman is a public office funded by taxpayer money. Their job is to communicate state policies, statutory government actions, and national matters to the public. A political party spokesperson is funded by private party donations. Their job is to campaign, criticize political opponents, and promote a specific electoral agenda. Okay, it went down. Hold on, finish reading that right now. Oh. The conflicts, and you know when you're using your phone, everything is go blank. But I can try my best to read it. The conflicts combining these roles results in the misuse of state resources such as staff, office space, and official channels to advance a partisan political agenda. And at times, I didn't even know where the director of communication was when he's communicating for the PLP, whether he was at his office, which is government, where I pay him, or whether he was doing my work, or he's doing the party work, or whether he was talking about the government, or whether he's talking about his party, and I got confused. And I talk about it, and I said, no, man, this is confusing. I don't know what you're doing. I don't know who you are at this time. But we have leaders, and when the leaders allow certain things to happen, you can't blame subordinates for doing things. You blame leaders. We have some callers there, Siobhan. You want to comment on that before I go to the callers? Siobhan, oh, go ahead.
I think that we invite independent observers to the country. They make their observation. I think I saw a statement from the director saying he hadn't maybe been shown the report. So I think, I don't know how that works, but I assume that, I mean, it was covered.
They were on the news, I guess. Okay, Siobhan breaking up. Let's go to this call in the meantime while we try to get back Siobhan, who's joining us via Zoom. Go, Kermit, connect that caller there. I just got someone sent me the rights convention of the child. Let me see if I can accept all. Go ahead, caller. Garden Rear AM, you live.
Yes. Good morning to you, Nuri, and good morning to Siobhan. Once you get back on to the wireless arm of Seattle Johnson.
Yes.
Just a couple of points you make, right? But the first one is on education. Well, the education act was 25th, I think, of March of this year. And within that gazetting, the right to education overrides many of the things that you spoke of. 23.3. There's no person shall be admitted to any public school on account of the religious persuasion, race, social or immigration status, or language of such a person, or his parent. And so what it does now, it makes mandatory from 4 years old and up access to education.
What does access to education mean? Because we're not disputing access. Be disputing whether it should be a fee.
No, but Steve, that's what I'm saying. I'm used to the word access, right? But yes, what it did, it changed it from access, but we just say access technically. In law now, it says no one can be refused admission. The access to education, sorry, would have made the argument you had valid, because access to education could have been that you could have went to, you could have said when you make private school available for them or for a fee, it would have made it, it wasn't denying them access. But now you can be refused admission, period, based on the law that just passed.
So if you do not have any of your the vaccinations, can the school deny you access?
They can.
They cannot? You said they cannot?
No, they could. That's for public health. That comes under the public health.
What about national security?
No, it wouldn't be national security.
Can you be denied access for national security?
I don't know. That's a good question. But what is the threat to national security of educating someone?
Not knowing who they are.
Well, yes, but that's a separate question. Now, under the law of social services, it says that every child should be in custody of a parent or guardian. Now, that law would require that the school must require that the parent must come and present themselves as the parent of that child or the guardian. The guardian of the child is not some affidavit or something that's recognized, that somebody draw up by the JP. It means that it has to be recognized by the court. And so when a child comes to register, it's responsibility of government to identify that every child is in the custody of their parent. That is something we don't do. And I guess we would enforce that. And then you have that will achieve the whole concept of saying that you must be legal in the country, because the parent itself would have to have some state-issued ID. And the only way to get a state-issued ID is to be in the country legally. But we talk about trafficking in children and all of these different things. Well, if you consider the 40,000 or 50,000 individuals, or maybe even the private schools, I think we may say up to 100,000 individuals that are under the age of 18, The fact is that we have no proof and no evidence that they are in custody of a parent or a court-recognized guardian. We simply have somebody say, this is my nephew, or this is my this, or whatever, and we just open the door for schools, we open the door for people in the country. And so that's where the deal's in. But just let me speak to this concept of the media, too, also. When we talk, something I talked about for a long time has been promised to us, transparency, accountability, integrity, anti-corruption, and freedom of information. And so when these conflicts arise, that's where you begin to violate one of these transparency, accountability, integrity, anti-corruption, or freedom of information. And I've always said, you have a country, you are a country in trouble when you need a law to force your leaders to be transparent, to force your leaders to be accountable, to force your leaders to possess integrity, to force an anti-corruption, and to force freedom of information. Just think of that. Where are we in the Bahamas? Where we should be? The only way our leaders can represent transparency, accountability, integrity, and anti-corruption and freedom of information is to force it by law under the penalties of prison, because it's not our nature to be so. That is a bigger problem than actually having the laws itself.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thanks very much. Let's go to the next caller. Siobhan, you back yet? Or your Zoom still dead?
I'm back.
Okay. Let's go to the next caller. No, these things happen. Technology. Let's go to this next caller so they engage us, and then we'll continue our conversation. Go ahead, caller. Guardian Radio AM, you live. Kermit, that caller gone? Let's move on to the next one. Go ahead, caller. Guardian Radio.
Good day, sir. The international, and they said, what is the purpose of them giving the report when it all boils down? The people still don't carry out their recommendation. The recommendation was that you need reform, you need this, and you need that. Whatever they said, and it still hasn't been done, been carried out, because this now, the country has just been run badly. It's totally been run badly. And here's the situation, sir. What I personally looking at and seeing every day, we have a government that do not know exactly what they're doing in the country. They don't know what they're doing because the country's been run poorly. And you know who you got to blame for it? You got to blame the Bahamian people. We, us. You can't blame nobody else because that's what we want. And every time we get mad with one another, we got to look at what we the ones who elected them. Us Bahamian people. So we got to shut up, take it for the next 5 years, and live it in. Nothing we could do until this government go.
I appreciate it.
What should we do?
Boy, we can try to find one today. We can try to find one today.
And the sad thing about it, you have a government who don't listen to the people. This government don't care nothing about the people. The election just gone now. We tell them we want reform. We tell them we want freedom of information. You see him say anything yet? He lied, said he sold a hotel in Freeport. The hotel is on the way of being rebuilt all over, whatever. It's just too much lies. And the Bahamian people fought for it, so we get swing. We get swing big time. And these people who calling for the PLP gotta realize the country is going backwards. It's not going forward. It's the worst the country have ever been run. The hospital in the bad state, the school in the bad, every year the same thing over and over. You gotta blame the dumb Bahamian people. Me and you. All of us.
I appreciate
you
calling. Question, Siobhan. Ms. Johnson, you, in part of your expertise, you deal in marketing and ensuring that people are aware of the activities of your client, right? There are a number of people who claim that this administration is not doing what they say they're doing. And we know that this administration is doing a lot, right? What should the government be doing now to ensure that their messaging is going out? There's a lot of criticism saying, man, no, the government is doing some things contrary. I want to know your input on that. As I find this Article 28 in the UNICEF Right for the Child, and I just found something about education, but I want you to do a brief commentary on that. Go ahead. We lost Siobhan again. Zoom is not doing as well today. But let's go to this Article 28. It says, Article 28 on UNICEF for every child states, Article 28, 1, states parties recognize the right to education and with a view of achieving this right progressively on the basis of equal opportunity, they shall in particular, A, make primary education compulsory and available free to all. B, encourage the development of different forms of secondary education. B, encourage the development of different forms of secondary education, including general and vocational education, make them available and accessible to every child, and take appropriate measures such as the introduction of free education and offering financial assistance in case of need. C, make higher education accessible to all on the basis of capacity by every appropriate means. D, make educational and vocational information and guidance available and accessible to all children. E, take measures to encourage regular attendance at school and the reduction of dropout rates. And two, state parties shall take all appropriate measures to ensure that school discipline in a manner consistent with the child's human dignity and in conformity with the present convention. Three, or the third one for the Article 28, states parties shall promote and encourage international cooperation in matters relating to education, in particular with a view to contributing to the elimination of ignorance and illiteracy throughout the world and facilitating access to scientific and technical knowledge and modern teaching methods in this regard, particularly of needs of developing countries. Siobhan, you there? Siobhan? Boy, Zoom. Let's go to the next caller.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Can you hear me now?
Okay. Okay. Sorry.
My question to you before I go to this next caller. A Bahamian woman in particular. Do you believe there should be more rights for a Bahamian child or Bahamian woman and their child in contrast to an immigrant woman and their child? Should there be a distinction, or where one has more opportunities or access to more opportunities, or like the just UNICEF right for a child say, man, it's free for all. Anyone inside this country should have access, right? And you know, they have scholarships for Bahamians only, right? Should that be access to every child who attends school?
Bahamians should always be prioritized, but I believe that a child is predominantly innocent and they are entitled to basic health care and a basic education. So I think that the government should manage our resources, and any time that the resources deem inadequate, they should seek alternative means to supplement the resources for the persons that may be non-Bahamians. I don't think that it should be immediately, the first choice should be to put a strain on what is taxable, especially if that population does not equitably contribute to taxes. But I think there are alternative funding mechanisms in the world for a developing country if there's a strain on the resources available to us.
Our entire hospital is a strain. We don't have enough money for Bahamians. Trying to get money for our hospital now. We borrow millions of dollars trying to get this next hospital. The issue now is if you go to Princess Margaret Hospital and you go into that triage, you can wait. You can wait because more than likely there'll be 50 people ahead of you who happen not to be Bahamian. You want to know, should they be able to get, or everyone must be get access to medical facilities, but should there be an additional fee for those people, or should it be the same $5, $10 for all? And that is what Bahamian people want to talk about. They don't want to say, well, you come first and I come last and I have to jump the line. But surely the benefits of the Bahamas should be first, primarily for Bahamians first, and secondarily, for those who are here and who do not have status and who get the access. And there's a lot of frustration building with we find that people are playing with words with us. And we say, man, I'm just not happy. The number of Bahamians are not happy because they are last. There's no benefit to being Bahamian. And that is the concern. What is the benefit? When everybody... Anyway, let's go back to the callers there. Go ahead, caller. Guiding Radio AM, you live. Kermit? Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Just trying to hash things out.
I hear what you're saying in terms of education, and I heard a caller called in and he was, you know, focusing on the PLC and the things that they're doing that are not right, whatever. But I also heard you indicate and you read something from Mr. Jeff Lloyd and his contribution to education and his viewpoint. To me, that also doesn't help the Bahamas and help our economy in terms of, hey, we have to facilitate all these children, whatever. My concern is, how about us dealing with this from the root in terms of the children are here, we're trying to figure out, okay, who do we assist with the processes? I absolutely positively love the part, the article that you read as it pertains to the father of the child when they do come in to be registered at the school. That eliminates a whole lot because I've noticed that when there's when persons are being deported, we don't see children going with them. So are they leaving their children with someone else to deal with? And so that will really deal with a lot of that situation. I'm concerned about how is it that they're, like you said, trafficking, the children coming in. We're looking at persons, we're giving them jobs and stuff to come in. Your children are coming in with you. Is the government considering when you're deciding to give work permits, when you're deciding to give whatever accommodation towards the person to come into the country, where you're going to live? Do you have somebody who's going to support you while they're here in the event there's a hurricane? How many persons are you bringing in with you? Do we have all of these persons that you're bringing in with you? Is our system too crowded? Is there going to be private school education? Whatever, and to check it, you know, when we're leaving the Bahamas and we're going to the U.S., there's a customs who are looking in our face and looking ensure that they connect. You go in our country, and sometimes they ask you, what's the nature of your travel? You see what I'm saying? But to us, it's like, hey, just come in. We're not checking. We're not paying attention. And then when it becomes a problem, then we cry. How about dealing with the problem before? How about dealing with the situation before it gets to this point? And how do we deal with the situation before it gets to this point? My question.
Excellent questions. I don't know what we're doing. And perhaps I'll get someone from immigration to explain the technicalities of these things. But the issue here is, if you ask laymen, Bahamians, how migrants are coming into the country, they'll say they're coming through the airport. General. It's anecdotal. I'm not sure if that's what it is. I'm not sure if these people coming through boats, whatever it is. But people say, yeah, they come in anecdotal through the airport. They're saying that they are not returning. They come as tourists and they stay here forever. By this time, our government should be able to respond to that. Saying, according to last year, we had 10,000 people came in through the airport and we had 9 who left. We only had about 1% of those people who we cannot say has left the country. Other than that, they leave the country regularly. Can we have that data and confirm that we know the numbers? Can we... of these parents or adults who are registering their children, can we say they have a fixed permanent address or they are registering in shanty towns? If you go to Lutra, there's shanty towns galore, but their children going to school. How is it that they can meet the criteria when the criteria say you need to have a fixed address? And when they bring the child and say, sir, ma'am, you don't have a fixed address. We need to have a fixed address to register the child. And they're not asking these questions. Or when the principal or the school faculties ask these questions, they're being told by government officials, no, you don't have to ask these questions anymore. When you ask the questions about whether your the parents have status, you said you don't have to ask these questions no more. Whether you ask for the birth certificate, the state to ascertain the identity of the child, there seems to be a disconnect. And again, I believe that children who are born into migrant homes, who are in my definition, children, Bahamians in waiting, who will more likely get citizenship in the future. I don't want to disenfranchise them, you know, but I'm saying that our government have a duty of care to making sure all of the documents are entered, and they have a duty of care to protect us for systems that do not work, and that it seemingly is not happening. And someone must call foul and correct these things so we can move forward. The same thing juxtaposed by what is happening at the Director of Communication for the government and the Director of Communication for the Progressive Liberal Party, the seemingly bastardization of all of our systems. We're watching it being taken advantage of and abused. And those who in the know, who are cultured, who are sensitized, who are educated, who should say this should not happen to happen. No one has spoken out to say, no, what is happening to us should not happen. We are being abused. We are being abused. And this is what the conversation. I have Siobhan Johnson, who is with me today. We didn't have a good connection today via Zoom. She's going to be joining me again tomorrow, hopefully tomorrow. We'll continue this conversation and other conversations as we talk about the making of the Bahamas, the making of a nation, and how do we... Siobhan, are you there again?
I am here.
I can let you say the last word. Whatever you want to talk about. Last word. We're about to leave right now.
Of course, we have to say Happy Literacy Day and encourage everyone to read a book.
And something happened to be
of
happening
course,
tonight?
The Aneurys book.
Yes. What happened tonight?
PM Bon Vivant.
What happened there?
We're coming to talk about literacy.
Oh, okay. I'll pass by. You say 6 p.m. today? Bon Vivant. Yeah, that word.
Sandy Port.
That's a far drive from Old East, by the way. But anyway. This has been Guardian Radio AM. Thank you very much, Siobhan Johnson. Tomorrow, hopefully we have a better connection tomorrow. We'll discuss some things about how do we build the Bahamas, the making of the Bahamas, what we should be expecting, man, what we should be demanding of our leaders. We're supposed to shine the spotlight on them and say, no, we ain't tolerating this, man. Because there seems to be a disconnect. Because when the colonizers left us, they left us with institutions, you know. And it seems that if even though we help build the institutions, we just don't know how to manage it properly. And that more likely will be our conversation tomorrow. We don't know how to manage this plantation. This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. Have a wonderful day.
Just sign in and have a seat, please. They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Six Center or Imaging at Grosvenor today.
Attention Island Game players. Percy's Pension Plan is now accepting applications. Deposit $25 and you are officially in the running for a weekly salary of up to $1,000 a week for a full year. Applications close September 8th. Apply now at theislandgame.com. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app. Nassau, Bahamas.